Rewind, your week in review is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.
This week on Rewind, your week in review. 6 months after COVID-19 hits Wisconsin, we'll ask a top state official what we've learned, whether state officials are making vaccination plans, and why getting a flu shot is more important than ever. A split Supreme Court keeps the Green Party candidate for president off the ballot. A Brown County judge blows out the candle on Kanye West's birthday party campaign in Wisconsin.
USA! USA!
And two Trumps and the vice president campaign here.
Rewind, your week in review for September 18th.
I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
For 6 months, COVID-19 pandemic has reshaped life in Wisconsin. So at this 6 months point, we're so grateful that Julie Willems Van Dyke, Deputy Secretary of the Department of Health Services, has joined us for the first part of Rewind to talk about, well, the impact of COVID-19 and looking forward. Julie, welcome to Wisconsin Eye.
Thank you, Steve. Happy to be here with you.
Before we, JR and I, ask some questions to Julie, I just want to run through some basic facts and figures to lay the groundwork for our questions of Julie. It's about a minute and a half. First of all, since March, 1.3 million negative tests, 94,746 positive tests, 6,522 hospitalized with COVID, 1,231 deaths. Now, this is the agency reported as of 2 p.m. yesterday. These numbers will change. There'll be an update at 2 p.m. today. Yesterday recorded 2,034 positives. That was a record. 70% of the deaths in Wisconsin have been in six counties, Milwaukee, Waukesha, Kenosha, Racine, Brown, and Dane. And our National Guard members have administered 420,000 COVID tests. Just a few more facts. We all know that it has triggered a major change in how we work, from offices to our homes. The governor's first stay-at-home emergency order was overturned by the Supreme Court. There's a Polk County lawsuit pending against the mask-up statewide edict that the governor issued that has got to be renewed or lapse on September 28th. And just two more facts before we get to Julie. K-12 schools, teachers, administrators, and parents statewide are struggling with in-person or online learning. And finally, the number of positives on UW system campuses has forced online learning orders, quarantines of dorms, and sanctions of fraternities. Julie, thanks for your patience. My first question is, 6 months into the COVID pandemic, what has Wisconsin learned about the virus, ma'am?
Well, Steve, I think the facts that you just laid out illustrate the first lesson I'd say we've learned, which is this is a persistent virus, and it is very infectious. And so it is not going to go away easily. And because it is a respiratory virus, it is very readily spread from person to person. And that is why we continue to take precautions such as encouraging and mandating people to wear masks, keeping physical distance from each other, encouraging people to keep their social circles small, working remotely, and all of those positive practices that you mentioned. I think another thing we learned, it's kind of funny when I look back at my notes in March and April and compare them to now. I want people to remember that back in March, we did not know that this virus could spread by people who had no symptoms. We thought you had to have symptoms before the virus spread. It was in around April that we learned that was not true. Unfortunately, it would be much easier to contain if it only spread with people with symptoms. And so that has continued to modify how we address the disease and why expanding testing so largely as we have was really important, so we could start to capture some of the people who may be infected and not even know it. I want to emphasize is we've also learned a lot about how to take care of people who have COVID. And so we're seeing better results in our hospitalizations when people are hospitalized. You know, thousands of people have been hospitalized across the world, and our great healthcare providers have learned. And so it's still a nasty disease if you get it, but we're doing better in that regard.
Just a quick follow-up. JR's got the next question, but I have a follow-up. Have young adults been the ones testing positive recently? Are young adults the reason that we have hit a 20% positive rate?
Yeah, we have definitely seen an upsurge in the number of people testing positive in that 18 to 24-year-old age category. In fact, if you look over the last 2 weeks dating back to August 30th, they represent 40% of our new cases in the state. So they're definitely an important contributor to that upsurge. But I want to also note, 40%. That means 60% of the cases are still spreading across people from all different age groups.
Sorry, JR, your turn.
Sorry, I just want to ask one of the most public kind of things we see about in trying to deal with the pandemic is the mask mandate. Mm-hmm. We're seeing a spike even with the mask mandate in place. Does that undercut the message that this is effective if we're seeing a spike in cases while it's in place?
Yeah, I think it's really important to look at what happened with the mask mandate, JR. So the governor put the mask mandate in place August 1st. As we looked at the month of August, we saw steady decline in the number of cases we were seeing across our 7-day averages. The end of August, we brought, as we just said, thousands of young people together. And so much of the spike that we're seeing is definitely related to some changes in behavior that happened in that same period of time. There are a number of studies that have been done by CDC and others that have demonstrated the effectiveness of mask mandates. And frankly, I hate to think about how bad it would be, even worse than it is now, if we didn't have the mask mandate in place.
I'm going to do a follow-up on JR's question. Does DHS have a recommendation for the governor on September 28th when the mask edict lapses? Julie?
Yes, we want to do everything we can to be sure that there is still a mandate for masks. But, you know, I think there's another really important point here. You know, the people of Wisconsin care about each other. And we, you know, I wear this mask to protect you. It really is. My mask is more important for protecting people from my respiratory secretions. So we're a caring population that want to take care of each other. And I think we can rise above some of the politicization of masks. And just when we are out and about, put a mask on and we will start to see, it's a positive thing to bring these numbers down.
Okay. And just a P.S., JR and I are in separate studios. There's no one else in the studio, so we appreciate your wearing the mask, and I just want to explain why we're not. Okay, Julie, my question is this. The federal government it said states should start beginning plans to vaccinate and immunize, but then just this week, the director of the CDC says not until the second quarter or the third quarter of next year. Of course, President Trump contradicts him, said he made a mistake, and potentially end of October. So I'm not asking you to predict when we get a vaccine, although you can if you want. But here's my question. When DHS gets a federal advice to begin planning mass immunizations, how has the agency responded?
Well, honestly, we've been thinking about this since March and April as well, too. So one of the things we benefit from in this state is we have a great immunization registry that all providers use to record immunizations. So one of the things we had to start doing several months ago was begin to make the programming changes in our immunization registry to include a vaccine for COVID-19. So we're already starting to do those kinds of things. We are in the early stages now of that we know vaccine will be coming sometime. It doesn't really matter when. We need to be ready to think about important things about being able to store vaccine properly. Many of these vaccines require refrigeration or freezers at extreme temperatures, how to transport vaccine, how to distribute vaccine, how to administer vaccine, and how to prioritize. Because, you know, actually, maybe the president and Dr. Redfield are both right, that we may start to see small amounts of vaccine coming by the end of the year. But as Dr. Redfield was talking about, when we would see mass amounts of vaccine may take more months beyond that. So it will not be everybody's got vaccine tomorrow. It will be a gradual increase in the availability of vaccine, and the distribution of vaccine is what is most likely to happen.
Okay, I think I've got time for three more questions. JR, you're up.
I guess I wanted to ask, we got obviously a lot of money from federal government, the CARES Act, to address some of these things. But if that money goes away, how do we pick up the tab for testing or contact tracing, especially with we're talking about state revenues maybe being down in the second year of the budget because of the pandemic and the economic impact?
Yeah, that's a great question, JR, and it's one we're deeply concerned about, because I do want people to understand that everything you've seen in this COVID-19 response in our state, from testing to purchasing PPE to paying for contact tracers, as you said, to supporting isolation and quarantine facilities, all of and funding to support our great healthcare partners, all of that has come from the federal CARES dollars. And those dollars end on December 31st. As of right now, and we can't carry them over into 2021, even if we haven't spent them all. And so we are very concerned, and I think it's important that the federal government think about this, because Wisconsin is not alone. You are correct that state resources are more limited than they were before the pandemic, and we know the state legislature has not contributed any funding to this so far. But we will need to be coming together as a state to think about that if we don't see action from the federal government.
Julie, the message I'm hearing from DHS, it's more important than ever to get a flu shot this season. Why? Especially in relation to COVID-19, please.
Yeah. Flu and COVID-19 are spread the same way. They have many of the same symptoms. They both can result in hospitalization. So we need to protect as many people as we can from influenza, which we already have a vaccine for. I need to be clear, the flu vaccine does not protect you against COVID-19. But first of all, you don't want to have both of these at the same time, because that would be really nasty for your own health. And second, we need to protect our hospitals, because we do not want our hospitals overwhelmed with a combination of flu patients and COVID-19 patients. So really important to help, if you get sick, to help distinguish which disease you might have will be easier if you've already been vaccinated, and definitely want to protect our hospital assets. So go get your flu vaccine. Usually only about half of Wisconsin's population gets flu vaccine. Let's up that number this year.
Okay, I'm going to ask one last question, unless we have more time. Julie, what about, is there a shortage of PPE equipment? And more importantly, the debate over the chemicals used to test. So can you update us? Is a shortage both of PPE and the chemicals needed to administer the COVID test, please?
Yes. So our hospitals are reporting fewer hospitals seeing shortages in PPE. You know, the market has recovered some from the surge we saw in the spring, but it is also a very much a just-in-time market. And so we are concerned if we start to see surges again around the country or the world, that we could see PPE shortages. The other issue is we've seen increasing demand for PPE. Because now we need masks for people who are in school, for people who are in court, for people who are at work. And so we definitely need increased production of these items, and the market is starting to respond. The state is also securing supplies, particularly to assist with local governments and local agencies that don't have as many access to PPE because they haven't set up those kind of vendor relationships, and they're hard to get established now. So we continue to provide support to that. On the reagents, we hear from a number of our healthcare partners, they continue to have problems with those chemicals, those reagents. This is particularly a problem for many of our clinical labs located within healthcare systems because they use a certain kind of packaged reagent. Some of our national labs, our reference labs, including like Exact Sciences here in Madison, are using bulk reagent, and they seem to be doing much better in regard to that. And that's why keeping a diversified supply of testing here in Wisconsin is very important.
On behalf of JR and I want to thank Julie Williams-Van Dyke, Deputy Secretary of the Department of Health Services, for a six-month update on COVID-19 in Wisconsin. Julie, thank you so very much for joining Rewind.
Thank you, Steve.
Meanwhile, back, JR, let's get back into the political reality world. Let's talk about the Supreme Court ruling this week that keeps the Green Party candidate off the ballot. Just quickly, before I give you a chance to jump in, 4-3 court ruling finds that the Green Party, the Green Party appealed the Elections Commission's 3-3 vote, finding fault with addresses on the nomination petitions. The Supreme Court ruling freed up the mailing of, you can correct me if I'm wrong, more than a million absentee ballots that clerks had been told to not mail. And the court ruled that adding the name of Green Party candidate Hawkins would cause confusion and undue damage. Before we cite from the different opinions, JR, give me your insight into this week's ruling.
A couple of things. One, the bottom line from the majority was this was filed too late. Remember, the Elections Commission ruled on August 20th that both Kanye West and Howie Hawkins had not made the ballot. Now, different sets of rulings, though. Kanye West is a 5-1 decision with two Republicans joining three Democratic appointees and saying he's off the ballot. The Green Party ruling was 3-3 with the party's deadlock. Nonetheless, it took 2 full weeks from after the decision was made by the commission, the Green Party to go to the Supreme Court, ask the court to take original jurisdiction, this lawsuit, and issue an order that would end up Howie Hawkins on the ballot. Jordy said, look, that's too late. And also, if you're a geek like me, I read the footnotes of Supreme Court decisions, there's a note in there from the majority saying, hey, legislature, let's think about changing the timeline here. As you think about it, the commission acted August 20th. September 1st, you had to have your proofs basically in for the ballot layout if you're local clerks. September 16th, those ballots must be delivered from the county clerks, municipal clerks. September 17th, they have to be mailed by the municipal clerks to those absentee ballot requests on file. September 19th, under federal law, they have to be sent out to military overseas voters. It's a narrow window for the court to act. The court said, hey, even if they had come to us earlier, we have been in an expedited process. So maybe we should think about a different timeline for these kind of cases.
Well, okay, but I'm so struck by Justice Annette Ziegler wrote the dissent calling the Elections Commission a kangaroo commission. I just want to read two sentences. The three members of this kangaroo commission, her term, not mine, who voted to deny ballot access did so because they concluded Walker did not present evidence to support her claims despite the fact that it was the commission's chairpersons, that's Ann Jacobs, Democrat appointee, herself, who denied Walker the opportunity to do so. That dissent was joined by Justices Rogenczak and Bradley. Just one sentence from the majority opinion. In this case, the court realistically does not even have a precious little amount of time to reach a decision and potentially grant any form of relief that would be feasible. Justice Hagedorn joined Justices Walsh, Bradley, Dallet, and Karofsky. Any PSs on that lineup, JR?
A number of them. One, Chief Justice Rogenczak called this voter suppression, essentially. Justice Rebecca Bradley likened it to when Alabama kicked off black candidates in the ballot in the 1960s. And I asked some people about this who watched the court, because there was a certain level of hyperbole, maybe a little bit over the topness from the three dissents that I read. And one thing that came back to me was there seems to be a frustration among the conservative justices about Brian Hagedorn. Remember, Hagedorn, this is at least the third time he's had a high profile break with his conservative colleagues in a case of political implications. Back early this year, the court was asked to directly take an appeal over whether people who have maybe moved but haven't responded to a postcard from the Elections Commission should be pushed off the voter rolls. He sided with liberals in that one. The court deadlocked because Justice Kelly was in the case, and then it went to the appeals court first. We will now not have a decision in that case with the Supreme Court until after the election, most likely. Then in May, we have the stay-at-home order, which was still overturned 4-3 by the court. But again, Hagedorn sided with the two liberals in the court that time. And there was open hostility in the decisions that were written by concurring decisions by Justices Kelly and Rebecca Bradley. Here again, we have him breaking, but now he's more important because the court's gone from a 5-2 conservative majority to 4-3. Brian Hagedorn, you could argue, is the most important justice of the Supreme Court right now. He's the one that swings. And the conservatives aren't happy about it. Oh, by the way, neither the grassroots. Don't forget, in 2019, when Hagedorn won his race, the grassroots really rallied around Brian Hagedorn in that race where he was pretty much given very little chance to win because he had such a financial disadvantage for much of that race. I've talked to a number of Republicans this week who expressed frustration with Hagedorn, feeling like he is not being part of the quote-unquote team. Now, Brian Hagedorn, when he ran for office, said, I'm not going to be a partisan judge. I'm going to decide things on the law. People that I talk to say, look, he's doing what he said he was going to do. But that frustrates those conservatives who expect him to be on their side in cases like this.
Well, 1 week ago, we said we're waiting on two court decisions, the Supreme Court on the Green Party and the Brown County judge on Kanye West's lawsuit to also be on the presidential ballot. So let's turn to that. That judge, Brown County Judge, Circuit Judge John Zukowski, upheld the decision of the Elections Commission. And the commission found that Kanye West's campaign missed the 5 p.m. August 4 deadline to file nomination papers. Lawyers for West, his birthday party, that's the name of his campaign, his party, argued that papers filed by 5:01 p.m. should be accepted. And that means, well, in light of the Green Party ruling, JR, you reported this week he was contemplating an appeal. Then they wouldn't tell you. There's just no chance that he's going to be on the ballot. So, sorry, Kanye, not on November 3, right, JR?
Yeah, again, it was because he was late. In both cases, if the Green Party and Kanye West campaigns had been more organized, they would have been fine. If the Green Party had simply filed an amendment to some of its filings with the Elections Commission about the address of Alice Walker, this whole thing is about the vice presidential nominee for the Green Party moved during the circulation time window for nomination papers. If they had just addressed that with a filing, that would have been fine. If they had answered the challenge that was filed, they probably would have been fine, but the party failed to do so. Now, the party argues it got conflicting information from the commission that whether it had to do that via a paper filing or could just do it at the hearing. That said, a better organized campaign would have addressed this. Same thing with Kanye West. Kanye West's campaign argued over and over and over again that he filed nomination papers at 14 seconds after 5 o'clock. That's not what this commission says happened. The commission said that his campaign walked into the building housing the commission office about 14 seconds after 5 o'clock. Didn't get to the office until 5:01. Even at 5:01 p.m., the papers weren't ready. They weren't numbered properly until several minutes after 5:01. So I now know why lawyers make such good money, Steve, because I heard lawyers argue to no end what 5 o'clock really means. And we both know common sense says 5 o'clock is 5 o'clock. That said, they try to continually blame other people for their own shortcomings. Yes, there are problems. Lexington Commission does not have a timepiece, official timepiece, says what time it is when you file. There are questions. If it's 4:59 p.m. on filing day, and there are five campaigns walking out at the same time, are they on time? Because they won't all get things done by 5 o'clock, right?
Yep, there are issues there.
The doors were locked to the building, a privately owned building housing the commission office. That is an issue. The same time Judge Zukowski said, look, they dropped the ball. If they'd shown up earlier, all this would have been taken care of. And I talked to operatives on both sides of that. I said, look, if Kanye West campaign showed up at 4:45, this would have been taken care of weeks ago. But they did it, and that is their own fault.
Okay, bottom line takeaway, questions we raised last week. Green Party candidate Hawkins, birthday party candidate Kanye West will not be my fellow Wisconsin voters on the ballot on November 3. Okay,
campaign if they want to get votes in Wisconsin.
Okay, JR, let's look at the three visits. Let's look at the three visits by two Trumps and Mr. Pence. Let's talk about, before we hear from their campaign speeches, Donald Trump Jr. visited Rothschild on Tuesday. Vice President Mike Pence gave a law and order speech in Janesville on Tuesday, also on Tuesday. And President Trump last night, Mosinee Airport, talked about specific aid for our cranberry and ginseng farmers. Let's hear excerpts from all three of those speeches, please.
There is not a single person in American politics who has done more damage and destruction to blue-collar jobs than Joe Biden. Joe Biden has single-handedly overseen the decimation of American manufacturing, pushing jobs to China, pushing your American dream to China. But he can come to places like Wausau, or have a surrogate come, or have the media run with it. See, he's going to do it. He's going to fix things. Donald Trump, with no political experience, comes in and created the single strongest economy America has ever known.
I'll make you a promise. We're not gonna defund the police, not now, not ever. President Trump and I know what the people of Wisconsin know. We don't need to choose between supporting law enforcement and standing with our African American neighbors or any of the minorities that live in our cities to improve the quality of their lives, their education, their jobs, and their security. From the first day of this administration, we have stood with law enforcement. We have expanded opportunities for African Americans. We have done both for 3.5 years. We're going to do both for 4 more years in the White House.
I'm proud to announce that I'm doing even more to support Wisconsin farmers. Starting next week, my administration is committing an additional, you've been asking for this for a long time, $13 billion in relief to help farmers recover from the China virus, including Wisconsin's incredible dairy, cranberry, and ginseng farmers who got hurt badly.
Chair, if there's time at the end of the show, I want to talk about who's coming here next week, but I want to save time for stock picks. So go ahead. Rising, sir.
Rising, Joe Biden. Look, no Hawkins, no West. Good for Biden. Look, I'm going to be honest with you. I've probably spilled more ink on Holly Hawkins and Kanye West than they deserve in this whole process in light of the impact they would have had either on the ballot. Two things. One, if you're talking third-party candidates, you can't assume because the Green Party candidate is on the ballot, his or her voters will only go to Joe Biden or whoever's closest to him or her on the spectrum, right? There are Green Party voters who are members of Green Party who think that Joe Biden is a corporate-owned politician just like Donald Trump, right? That said, without a Hawkins, without a West, it's one less thing to worry about come November 3rd for Biden about possible issues if it's a nip-and-tuck race. And right now, the public release polls, so it's not. You know, we have now 2 more polls this week with Biden up. 5 of the past 7 polls have Biden at 50% or better, which that's the magic number. Now, the caution here is Republicans tell me that their own, they call it modeling, where they do a little more intense examinations of some local areas, have it more in line with the Marquette poll, which is a 4-point spread. They feel like it's tightening and that it's in the right direction for them. Same time, we don't see Donald Trump in about 43, 44, 45% of these polls. He's stuck at a number. Trump has to figure out how to get past that, and that's why he's in places like Mosinee and why his son's in the Wausau area. That is his base in Wisconsin. He needs to supercharge that turnout to compensate for what we think a better Democratic turnout in places like Milwaukee and Kenosha and a problem for the Republicans in the suburbs.
Okay, I need you to quickly go through mixed and falling because time is short.
Derek Van Orden, Republican running for the 3rd District in Western Wisconsin, moved up the chain in the NRCC's Young Guns program, which means he's meeting certain benchmarks. The president last night gave him his support 100%. The issue is 6 weeks out, I have not seen any independent expenditures versus the FEC for Van Orden's campaign. Meanwhile, Ron Klein, with $3.1 million in the bank in the last reporting period, has been on TV for almost a solid month now, post-primary. That race just isn't popping, but there are signs there it could break late, and Van Orden could have a shot if the president does better than what he's doing right now in Wisconsin.
Falling.
Special registration deputies. These are folks who go into nursing care facilities and living facilities to help people vote. They basically were told back this spring, you're done because we can't risk you going into these facilities. The commission again said, sorry, but can't do it. The issue is that one clerk, for example, told the commission, I think it was the August primary, the return rate for Epstein Barr in a nursing facility was really abysmal. So it's going to be a challenge for some of these folks who are confined to these facilities to get their ballots in. So they said he'd put extra work to help them out this fall.
Okay. And who's the headliner for the Trump campaign next week that we're going to be talking about a week from now?
Oh, we've got Pence coming back on.
That's all right. Yeah.
We've got Pompeo speaking in the Senate chamber on Wednesday.
The Secretary of State is speaking in the Wisconsin Senate chamber on Wednesday. Okay.
It's not. Oh, no, sorry. Pence is next Thursday. I'm sorry. But okay, Pompeo is, it's supposed to be a nonpartisan speech it's not a campaign stop technically. But Roger Roth, the Senate president, he hooked up with Pompeo. It's a long story I wrote about this week, but they hooked up and he extended the invitation to have him come speak in Wisconsin. And, you know, there's going to be a political benefit for having him in the state. Let's be honest.
That's amazing. I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
That's Rewind for September 18.
Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.